The first case on our calendar is 06-1594, Industrial Energy Users of Ohio versus the Public Utilities Commission of Ohio. Mr. Small.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. My name is Jeff Small. I represent the Office of the Ohio Consumers Council and the 1.3 million customers of the AEP companies in Ohio. With me today at council table are counsel for three other appellants. Mike Kurtz represents the Ohio Energy Group, a group of industrial customers. Sam Randazzo represents IEU Ohio, a group of commercial and industrial customers. And Kathy Kolick represents First Energy Solutions, an energy marketer affiliated with First Energy Corporation. This morning, I will present the threshold jurisdictional argument. Mr. Kurtz will address the actual record in the case below. Appellants would like to reserve 5 minutes of their time for rebuttal, which will be presented by Mr. Randazzo. Appellants emphasize 2 points. First, the Commission's order is illegal under any view of the Commission's statutory authority. This issue should be reviewed as a matter of law. Second, the Commission's order is not based upon the record in the case below. The Commission's order permitted AEP to charge customers $24 million for power plant research costs. Before electric restructuring legislation in 1999, otherwise known as Senate Bill 3, the Commission did not have the statutory authority to charge customers for a power plant well before service began. After electric restructuring legislation in 1999, the Commission still did not have the statutory authority. And its authority over setting generation rates was actually reduced in Senate Bill 3. Charging customers for AEP's power plant research costs is certainly beyond the Commission's new, more limited statutory authority regarding generation rates. The Commission has called the increased rates both a generation rate increase and a distribution rate increase. The rate increase is illegal under both theories. As stated in Revised Code 492805, the Commission has limited authority over the pricing of generation service. The Commission may review applications that seek to set market-based standard service offers under 492814. But AEP requested a guarantee of payments regardless of the cost, and the market-based rates were not at issue in this case. As stated in Revised Code Chapter 4909, the Commission retains authority to set rates for distribution service in rate cases. Such rate-setting authority requires a review of AEP's total distribution costs and setting rates according to the formulas set out in Revised Code Chapter 4909. That includes Revised Code 4909-15. That statute prohibits charging the utility property until it is at least 75% complete. But customers in this case were charged without a distribution rate case and certainly before AEP completed any of its project. Additionally, this court recently overturned commission decisions in Elyria and OCC versus PUCO. That's two cases that were decided at the end of August and the beginning of September, which were presented to this court as supplemental authority. Because distribution rates were increased based on generation costs, the Commission should again be reversed on this matter. The rate increase is illegal under any view of the Commission's statutory authority.
Counsel, if we agree with you, with your position, some of this has been collected from the ratepayers already.
All of it has been collected from ratepayers.
What are we to do about that?
Appellants ask that this be reversed and remanded and that the Commission be instructed to do nothing more than to order the refund of the $24 million to customers. Is there a follow-up question to that?
No, if I had a follow-up question, I would have asked you.
All right. I'm very sorry. The reason for the no further proceedings is that it's illegal and it cannot be cured by further proceedings at the Public Utilities Commission.
Let me take you in another direction beyond the legal issues. At your table are also the industrial ratepayers or a group of them?
Three representatives of consumers and one marketer representative, yes.
And what position did they take and what position did your client take with respect to the deregulation bill that has been so problematic and is now being finally reviewed by the governor and the legislature.
Are you asking the positions of the various parties regarding Senate Bill 3,
yes.
The existing law?
Yes.
There have been some differences and some cases where we've joined together with, for instance, the Constellation case is an example where the OCC and the industrial...
No, I'm asking, did you push for this, what I will call, in my view, a nightmare legislation? Did you and your...
I believe it's a fair statement. I hope this is a fair statement that electric restructuring across the nation, which it took place in more than just Ohio, was basically pushed by industrial customers. And certainly there was an involvement of the Consumer Council at the time when that was being drafted, as there is an involvement of the Consumer Council in the present proceedings to revise Senate Bill 3.
And isn't that the problem that the commission finds itself in, caught in, and this court as well, is a statutory structure that just didn't work out. It was actually fairly obvious from the California experience before they even passed it in Ohio, but it didn't work out. The commission has been struggling with that, trying to protect ratepayers and see to it that there's enough electricity available for customers.
Your Honor, I can't characterize what the commission has done in this case as trying to protect customers, because what they received is an application for something that could not be characterized as being at the cost of the market, but something's above cost, and has authorized a prepayment of research costs into this very expensive generation source without consideration for it being at the market, let alone anything lower than the market. So I don't characterize what the commission has done in this case as being protective of the consumer interest.
Educate us on the bill called for all of the retail electric operations to divest their generation, did it not?
That's
and then there was a back door. You can get out of this if you convince the commission that
this is 492817,
right.
Corporate separation. There have been temporary waivers granted to AEP, among other companies, for their continued operation of generating plants.
And so the commission granted AEP relief from that mandate.
Yes, and the OCC in particular has argued in this case that the commission has taken that one step further, because granting the kind of application that AEP has made in this case said that there will not be just a temporary ownership of those plants, but the AEP is asking for rate treatment of this for as long as the plant exists, which is decades now. So 492817, corporate separation, talks about the commission having the ability to give interim plans. Now we're talking about something for the life of a generating plant. That's decades. That's 40, 50, 60 yeah. years.
And
I don't call that an interim plan.
In addition to being outside of the legal authority of the commission, you and your and the other folks at your table object to this because you believe it's not even efficient in terms of competitiveness for the long-term benefit of ratepayers.
That's true, and for that, I think you need turn to nothing more than the commission's order itself. On pages 20 and 21, the commission states, and this is stunning, the order on page 21 states that the AEP, and this is referring to the continuing or additional submissions, should show or should address how the output of the proposed facility would flow to the benefit of Ohio customers. At this point in the proceeding, after hearing all the evidence, the commission wasn't even able to determine that there would be a flow of benefits to Ohio consumers. I think that's stunning, and that the commission would grant $24 million to a company that could not even show that there would be benefits
to
Ohio.
Well, don't consumers have an interest in adequate generation of electricity?
I'm sorry?
Do not consumers have an interest in the adequate generation of electricity?
Yes, but we're not interested in paying for above-cost generation, and we're not interested in the
Well, but that's a different point. I mean, the cost, who pays for it is one, but you said that that the commission was wrong in saying that, that consumers have an interest in this, in the generation plan.
I believe I said that the commission had not, could not conclude that the AEP's plan was for the benefit of Ohioans.
Right.
And
you take issue with
Well, I think that favors our side. It's just stunning that the company would be granted $24 million after a finding of that nature.
There was some indication in the briefs, I believe, that the Public Utilities Commission encouraged AEP to come forward with this plan as opposed to a plan that AEP designed themselves. How did, in your view, this get started? Was this an AEP initiative, or was this something that the commission was pushing for?
It's very difficult, of course, to say exactly what communications took place, but the reference that you that you have referred to is the rate stabilization plan case. It is in the supplemental material of that the OCC has presented in this case. At the very end of that case, in the last few sentences of the rate stabilization plan order, there's a mention by the commission that it would be interested in receiving a plan concerning a IGCC, integrated gasification combined cycle plant, and that it was exploring regulatory mechanisms for the collection of that. I think that speaks volumes. It speaks that the commission is interested in, it doesn't have clear authority, but is investigating how it might be able to support such a finding. IGCC, the power plant, was not under consideration at all in that case, so that was completely gratuitous. The company represented in the case below that they were responding to that initiative by the commission, and that's what we know from the record.
Can I take you back to the refund question and the follow-up that I wondered that didn't come?
I'm sorry?
Didn't we hold in KECO that we don't make refunds to certain cases? How does KECO interface with your claim for the $24 million refund?
Your Honor, KECO is very different from the present case. In the KECO case, and remember it was a 1957 case, and there was no question about the commission's authority. In fact, the KECO court emphasized that the Public Utilities Commission was the proper designated authority, and that it was in full compliance with the law, meaning the statutory rate-making provisions. In this instance, as presented in my earlier arguments, the commission was not the proper designated authority.
They're not the authority for rate-making?
Not for setting cost-based generation rates, no. That authority has been taken from the commission. They're to hear questions of whether there's market-based rate-setting and not cost-based rate setting for generation services. And they're not in full compliance with the law. If they wanted to use a rationale that this is a distribution case, they should be following the distribution rate making formulas in Chapter 4909. They didn't do that. So they're not following the statutes, and they're not the proper designated authority. And KECO is very different in that sense from the case below.
Thank you, Mr. Small.
Turn over the podium to Mr. Kurtz.
We've used most of your time, 15 minutes, Mr. Kurtz, but we'll set the clock for 5 minutes for you.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. First of all, I want to say that you cannot blame Ohio's deregulation law on this circumstance. The commission made a bad situation worse by what it did in this case. And the second point I want to make.
Let me ask you about that. This is new technology, is it?
Yes.
Unproven, unknown.
Yes.
At this point. And the commission, as Justice Kupp pointed out, at least seemed to nudge AEP. We don't know whether AEP had whispered in someone's ear first or not, but that's what's on record. Is this all about burning Ohio coal? Is that the underlying thing? And is your objection that there's just no way to be efficient in terms of the ultimate rate that's going to have to be received, meet the government EPA regulations like is in the paper today? So is that what's boiling under the surface here? Is the commission is trying to find a way to make Ohio coal acceptable?
Our objection is this. What AEP is doing is taking their old depreciated power plants that used to be in rate base that have been paid for by ratepayers for decades, taking those inexpensive units and selling them at a very high market rate and earning windfall profits. And then for this new experimental power plant, they're telling customers you have to pay for the research and development costs, the construction financing costs, and once it goes operational, a return of and a return on their investment, plus all operating expenses, even if the total rate from that new unit is above market. And it's every expectation that that's going to be well above market. The cost of this power plant has gone from $1.2 billion to $2.2 billion, and we haven't even gotten to the point of construction yet. AEP knows that this plant will be well above market, which is exactly why it wants to put all of the risk on consumers. When you add an above-market experimental IGCC rate on top of the already market-based rate from the old generation, you get, by definition, a rate which is in excess of market. That's why the Commission made a bad situation worse. Senate Bill 3 was a mistake. It forced consumers to pay for a market-based rate rather than the old cost of service.
And your clients were part of the folks that pushed for that.
The Ohio Energy Group
I realize that's not relevant, but.
Well, it's actually not really true. The Ohio Energy Group was formed about 4 years ago before Senate Bill 3, so we weren't in existence. We did not weigh in on that issue. But they made a bad situation worse by setting up a system where consumers will pay above market rates. This is, so you can't blame this situation on Senate Bill 3. And this case is not about reliability. This case is about money. AEP does not want to take the investment risk of this new multi-billion dollar plant. They want to put it all on consumers. They're making the same proposal in West Virginia. If this case was about reliability, AEP would build this power plant to provide reliable service. It's not. If this plant was needed for reliable service, AEP should fund their own R&D, should construct it, and then once it's built, charge a market-based rate for its new generation, the same as it's charging for its old generation, so the consumers will get what the legislature intended, a market-based rate, which is bad enough, but it'd be adding insult to injury to put an above-market cost on consumers. That's why this case is not about reliability, it's about money. One point about the KECO decision, this order was made subject to refund. AEP collected the $24 million subject to refund, which is
there any precedent where the court has ordered a refund like that?
I'm not certain, but when you're dealing with a D-rate, what AEP is telling this court essentially is that there's no effective review for commission decisions. If you can't order a refund, you can reverse the commission, but essentially can provide no relief to consumers. In a deregulated world, that doesn't make any sense. In 1957, maybe it did. Also, this order was made explicitly subject to refund if AEP did not build the power plant within 5 years. So they knew this money was at risk. This isn't a typical rate-making, filed rate doctrine type of question.
Does the fact that you did not file for a stay of the order, does that have any application to the request for refund?
A stay requires a bond. It's a very involved process. The position of the appellants was to seek a refund order from the court, and that's what we did.
About 30 seconds.
Thank you, sir. On this question about distribution ancillary services, that was the basis of the commission's order. It was completely based upon no evidence at all in the record. It was made up by whole cloth by the commission. AEP never suggested that this multi-billion dollar power plant was going to provide distribution ancillary services. And the commission's lawyers on page 12 of their brief have actually contradicted the commission itself when the lawyers on page 12 say that this power plant is going to provide two services, distribution, but it will be primarily devoted to generation, which is a deregulated product. So that line of rationale by the commission has been contradicted by their own attorneys. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kurtz. Mr. McNamee.
May it please the court. My name is Tom McNamee on behalf of the commission. With me at council's table is Mr. Marvin Resnick from American Electric Power. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of time for Mr. Resnick. Your Honors, three things happened in the case below. The commission first identified a threat, a problem, to the continued viability of the distribution system. That problem is identified in the testimony through the testimony of witnesses Lambeck and Wissman. The distribution, or the electric system in Ohio, the plants are old, getting older. They're not being replaced. They're subject to substantial threat. At least the coal-fired units are subject to substantial threat from the potential of federal carbon sequestration.
Mr. McNamee, I don't know that anyone disputes any of that, or the need, or the crisis that everyone's facing in Ohio with all of the thousands of consumers and the need for reliable service. The issue for us is whether or not the legislature has authorized the generation cost to be put on as a distribution charge. And well, I think that's really the crux of what Mr. Small has presented us with, and he's seeking a $24 million refund by order of this court. So could you address how it is that we should authorize the generation and the research and development cost as a distribution rate?
Certainly. There are several questions built in there, Your Honor, and they're all quite important. We would not take the view that this is a distribution matter at this point. At this point, this charge was included within the rate stabilization rate that was established. It's a 49-28-14 rate. It's a charge to generation, not a charge to distribution.
Where does the order say that?
That is a good question. I believe it says it in the opinion and order. I'm afraid I don't have the citation for you. But it was a rider added as a component to this rate stabilization charge. There was a 4% potential increase in that rate stabilization charge for government-ordered, PUC-ordered, or FERC-ordered increases, and that is the component that the commission used.
The research and development for a new generation plant is a rate stabilization charge?
Because the one of the primary concerns here is the ability to have, well, two concerns really, the need to have power to support the polar requirement and the need to have power to support the distribution ancillary functions. These are the backroom kinds of functions that are necessary to keep the distribution system operating.
But doesn't that just blur the distinction between generation charges and distribution charges that the legislature is trying to sort of divide, if you will?
The legislature didn't make that divide in the way we're used to talking about it. The legislature, if you look to the to the definition of ancillary service under 49-28-01, you'll find a whole range of services that require generating plant. And all of those ancillary services remain jurisdictional to the PUCO. So it's a strange hybrid kind of thing, but they're clearly jurisdictional. They're not included within the exemption that's found in 49-28-05-A1. So they remain jurisdictional to the PUCO, and they require generating plant. So they are both there. Excuse me. And it's necessary to have these kinds of functions in order for the distribution system to continue to operate. And that's the commission's charge, very directly. You can see that even in the definition of 49-28-05, there's an exception to the exception, if you will, for service reliability and public safety, and a general exception, except as otherwise provided in this section.
So you could even say then under that definition that anything that requires continued distribution, construction cost of a new generating plant, is a distribution charge because we have to keep distribution. Is that your argument basically?
No. What the commission did was include this within the generation, if you will, portion of the charges currently under the rate stabilization charge. It's a portion of that, and it's added to that, and because that's how generating related costs are recovered currently. In the event that a plant were built, and no decision has been made about this, that's the second thing that the commission did. It directed AEP to investigate a problem, not to build a plant. And you can see that from the commission's excuse me, from the commission's order, excuse me, at page 19 of the ONO. It says there would need to be a future rate case if a plant is built, but no plant's been built yet.
The essence of this then that the Public Utilities Commission is finding out whether this coal gasification plant is workable by charging the costs of that through AEP to the AEP distribution customers? Is that what's going on? We're doing a little research and development, but we're charging AEP customers to do it?
It's not research and development for the technology, Your Honor. The second thing that the commission did in the case below is direct American Electric Power to come up with a plan to address the problem that's been identified. The problem, of course, is the aging plant and that sort of thing that we've already discussed. But what the commission did is direct American Electric Power to investigate a broad range of issues. For example, the entry on rehearing, page 14 at paragraph 36, AEP has to look at alternative means to address the polar concerns. It's got to analyze the future need for generation, the timeline of the need, and the analysis of future shopping. It needs to determine who would own the plant, how it could be financed, whether there are alternatives available. Commission identified a problem, directed American Electric Power to address that problem, to figure out the best way to solve it.
Counsel, these were the phase one charges?
That was AEP's term, yes.
Yes, and those have all now been collected?
They have.
And we're at phase two. AEP estimated the plant to be, phase two was the charge for carrying costs, construction, all of that, and they estimated the plant would be online in 2010, is that correct?
That sounds correct, yes, Your Honor.
And this is less than, it's 2 years away.
And no construction has begun, Your Honor. And that's very sensible. This is a complicated problem. And whether building a plant is the best way to go or not simply hasn't been determined yet. That's the information that the commission...
You've collected all the money for the research. They have. But we still don't know if it's even going to be built.
The point of the exercise isn't necessarily to build a plant. The point of the exercise is to try to determine what's the best way to deal with the problem. The problem could be addressed in various ways. It could be
you could buy Canadian hydroelectric power, long-term contracts.
Yes, one thing you could do is buy power from someone else.
$24 million to negotiate that, does it?
But it needs to be available here. There are operating constraints. What we're talking about here are the backroom kinds of functions that are necessary to keep all of our lights on, all of these, so that you can have a competitive environment. You can't have a competitive environment without a level playing field, and the commission's trying to make sure that playing field stays.
But didn't the General Assembly make that decision for us? Didn't the General Assembly say that generation is competitive and distribution is not competitive, and that's where the rate payers pay the cost? And your argument seems to be that anything that supports distribution is ancillary to distribution, and therefore the rate payers, the customers, pay for it. And the issue is, I think for us, is legal issue is, has the commission gone beyond its statutory authority in what it did for AEP?
Now, I don't mean to speak that broadly. The statute does indicate, 492806 says the commission shall ensure that the policy sections are are complied with, and the policy sections require the commission then to provide adequate and reliable electricity. What it means to do here is to not provide overall generating supply to everyone. That's far too big of a charge. We would be looking at a whole lot more than one plan if that were the case. What the commission is looking to here is a much smaller universe, a much smaller universe indeed. It wants to be sure that there's sufficient services available to support these ancillary services, which require generation, the commission so found, to support these ancillary services that are jurisdictional to it, and to assure the continued polar supply of electricity. The polar charges are collected properly through the rate stabilization charge, and the commission is trying to be proactive.
I thought we were done with rate stabilization, though, now.
The plans continue for another year or so, Your Honor.
You threw out a term, we hear it all the time, and I'm at a loss to understand how it applies in this case. You said commission wanted to provide a level playing field. What does that mean in terms of this case?
What it means in this case is, in order for the goal of the competitive environment that the legislature tried to create through the passage of Senate Bill 3 to function, you have to have a grid that works. Before you can buy and sell electricity, you have to have the grid. It has to be charged and functioning. And that's, in order to achieve that, you have to have these ancillary services, the backup supply service, and all the lists that's in 492801. Those services have to be available, or the system simply won't function. That's all this case is about. The commission's trying to be proactive and to support its to fulfill its obligations pursuant to statute.
You would agree the commission has to be proactive within the statutory limitation, right?
Yes, and it is, Your Honor.
Mr. McNamee, if we find that the commission exceeded its authority with respect to the refund of the $24 million and the KECO decision, would you comment on that briefly?
Certainly, Your Honor. It would appear to us that the structure that's set up is for individuals who are dissatisfied with a commission decision, commission rate-setting decision, they have the option of getting a stay. That's the statutory relief that's available to them. These appellants, none of them, sought that relief. They didn't seek it. It was not ordered. At this point, the money has been collected. I'm not sure if American Electric Power has spent it all yet or not. Mr. Resnick may know that, but there is no refund at this point. The only outstanding issue at this point is for AEP to come back with the very extensive list of information that the commission has directed it to provide.
Thank you, Mr. McNamee. Mr. Resnick, you can take 2 minutes, Mr. Resnick.
All right, thank you, Your Honor. I want to address the question about the distinction between distribution and generation. What Senate Bill 3 separated were the functions of generation and distribution. And in 4928.14, the General Assembly also imposed on the electric distribution utility the obligation to be in a position to provide a supply of firm generation service. That has made that obligation, it's referred to sometimes as the provider of last resort, whatever you want to call it, statutorily, if you're looking for where is that authority, it's in 492814, the distribution utility has to provide generation service. Now, that may sound bizarre, but what it envisioned, and I think that whatever people might say about Senate Bill 3, is that as far as
but
making sure
But you don't
sure
have to do it by owning power plants.
You don't have to.
You can do it all by contract with those who do. And in fact, that was what was envisioned, is that AEP and the other companies would divest generation, and that would be a separate competitive entity.
What I would suggest is what the General Assembly did was not be specific as to how the distribution utility would meet that obligation. There would be a portfolio of opportunities of supply to do that. Some could be purchased, some could be built generation.
Let me ask you about phase two. You're through phase one. You've collected the money.
Yes.
Phase two, your company estimated would be, this plant would be up and running in 2010. How are you coming on that?
We are not, Your Honor. And the very reason is, and this was something we recognized from the outset, that Senate Bill 3 was enacted, that there is a general perception that a distribution company shouldn't be owning generation. I think people haven't read 49-28-14. The language is absolutely plain, just like First Energy Solutions argues. Look at the plain language of the statute. Look at other sections to see if it's compatible. 49-28-17E refers to distribution service provided by generation assets. Look at the definition of 49-28-01 for ancillary services. It refers to functions that support that are necessary for distribution. And it talks, when you look at those functions, reactive power, black start capability, spinning reserves, those are all generation in nature, but it confirms that what the legislature recognized in 49-28-17 was that the distribution function now included this responsibility. The 600 megawatts is just a small portion of the combined responsibility of Columbus Southern Ohio Power. Their peak load in 2006 was 9,000 megawatts and expected to grow by 2024 to 12,000 megawatts. This 600 megawatts is somewhere between 5 to 7% of that ultimate provider of last resort responsibility.
The refund, if we determine the commission acted without legal authority, what's your best argument as to why there should not be a refund?
I start with the point that the issue was not raised in the notice of appeal. And so, frankly, I don't think that issue is properly before the court. But even if it were, my best point is to quote from the pleadings from the industrial energy users in their petition, their complaint for writ of prohibition. And very briefly, they said, a successful appeal cannot cure the injury suffered by the electric utility customers as a result of payment of unlawful rates. This court has already decided that such unlawful collections are not refundable as a matter of law. Now, that's not us. That's the industrial energy users. And there is the availability of 4903.16. Mr. Kurtz can say that that's cumbersome. That's what the legislature put in place. So I don't think there should be a refund. These costs, and by the way, these are not research and development costs. IGCC is proven technology. We have included in our second supplement at page 55 and 56, testimony of our witness talking about how this is proven technology. We are bringing it up to commercial scale. The types of costs we're doing, these aren't people sitting in a lab concocting something that no one knows about.
But these are planning costs for implementation of this on a commercial scale?
Absolutely. These are the cost that would be incurred for any kind of large generating unit. You have to figure out the transmission interconnections. You have to figure out where you're going to unload the coal and store it and other materials. And the company's Exhibit 5B, which we've included at page 36 of our second supplement, gives a general overview of what those costs are. This is not R&D. I know that
so
the
have you figured it out?
Refers to it that way. I'm sorry?
So have you figured it out?
Yes. We have, and we are ready to go forward, but, and I hope this is understandable from our perspective, we agree $2 billion is a lot of money. We are not prepared to make that investment and then find out that we don't have a way of collecting that money. It really is that simple. And we have said all along that what we are looking for under Senate Bill 3's structure is assurance of cost recovery.
So,
I don't think that that's an unreasonable position.
So your approach is give us $24 million from the ratepayers.
$24 million was phase one
cost. From the ratepayers, and then we need to come back either to the legislature or to the commission and give us a green light to protect ourselves to recover the entire investment from the ratepayers.
We don't believe that any additional legislation is required in order for the commission's order to be authorized. What the commission has done is allow recovery of these pre-construction costs, and what the commission said is, but we're not letting go of the reins. If it turns out that when you come back having answered a variety of questions the commission set out, we, the commission, will determine whether it makes sense to go forward. And then if we determine that, When this plant is complete, again, it isn't a blank check. The commission will conduct a hearing, as Mr. McNamee indicated.
Well, to the contrary, Mr. Resnick, it really is a blank check, isn't it?
No,
give
sir.
Us $24 million for investigation of whether or not we should build a generating plant, and give us a guarantee that if we spend $2.5 billion, we get it back from the rate customers. That is exactly what you're asking. And the problem that I think everyone's having with that is the dichotomy between the generation costs as opposed to the distribution costs.
And
in your world, anything that's ancillary to distribution is distribution. And we don't even see generation because it's ancillary to distribution, and we have to distribute because we're a provider of last resort. That's really your argument, isn't it?
I don't have to get to the point of the ancillary distribution. All I need to do is look at 4928.14. The provider of last resort obligation has squarely been put on the electric distribution utility. That's the phrase that's used.
Okay.
So for me, there's no question about, is this ancillary, is it not? Is it opening up the door to everything? All I know is that this is being proposed in fulfillment of the obligation we have to be the provider of last resort. It's all well and good to say that people can switch, but it's ultimately, it's customer choice legislation.
Is there any cost that you could, is there any cost you could define for us that you would perceive to be a generation cost?
The costs associated with those units that are taken to market would be generation costs and would be separate and apart from this. This plant is being dedicated to fulfillment of the provider of last resort obligation.
When you say taken to market, that means sold on the open market. So if you had something for sale, that would be a generation cost. But something that's being built to generate power to put on the grid for ultimate distribution is a distribution cost.
If the plant is being dedicated to providing the provider of
last
resort obligation. That's right.
I think I understand your argument. Thank you.
Sure.
That's sort of like we have an accounting LIFO and FIFO and all of that, and essentially what you're saying is all of our other plants, as they discussed, which generate power more cheaply than this one will, are dedicated to the free market, and the expensive one is dedicated to a provider of last resort, and the incumbent customers have to pick up the tab on that. It doesn't get rolled in and washed around with all the rest of your generating facilities. This one is just for you, customers.
The point is whether we build this plant or not, all of the existing generation can be dedicated to the market. That is something that Senate Bill 3 provides. 4928.17E indicates that the electric utility can divest itself of its generation.
So that's all to the market, and this one's just to the customer.
As I say, this is something, the taking the existing generation and taking it to market is something that's allowable under Senate Bill 3.
Doesn't that seem audacious on the part of your company and the commission both?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. What we're trying to do is build a plant that is going to be, as Mr. Small indicated, it's going to be out there 40, 50 years. This is a plant that not only is going to better meet the environmental requirements that we're facing today, but has the potential for being able to capture carbon and to be and ultimately sequester that.
If there's a question about that,
this is where the environmental regulation is going. It may be more expensive at the front part of it, but what we're looking at is over the lifetime, comparing this to what the cost of a pulverized coal, traditional pulverized coal unit would be, and this I think is what the commission wants to ultimately know. Over the life, is this going to be a better approach, given the uncertainties of the environmental regulations that we face?
If there's uncertainty about your recapture of the $2.5 billion, and issues with respect to generation or distribution, wouldn't it be a legislative determination that you could ask the General Assembly to authorize collection of these costs, and then not get into this nebulous ancillary to in fulfillment of our provider of last resort responsibilities? Isn't that the way that should be, instead of trying to you know, spread the peanut butter across so it all looks like it's there?
Your Honor, I believe that the there are issues involved with Senate Bill 3 that have certainly caught the attention of the legislature and the governor and of this court in one of its more recent decisions, indicating a concern with the potential for legislative change. I think that was in the context of what the market price was going to be and whether there was going to be rate shock if at the end of these rate stabilization plans, the rates just went up to market. I don't believe that there has been, and I think, frankly, it's a bit short-sighted, I don't think that there's necessarily been a concern focused on, are we going to have enough generation decades from now? That's what we're proposing. We believe, and the commission agrees, that that Senate Bill 3 provides that authority. Now, as I said, it is not a surprise, and I'm not, you know, casting any blame on anyone. It certainly isn't a surprise that that's being appealed. It's a new law, and I understand that. But as we look at it, we do not feel that it would be necessary to go back to the legislature for any more specific authorization. Now, if there's going to be legislation, as you know, the bill has been introduced, that may well make sense to address it, but we don't think it's necessary to go forward. We don't think it's necessary to affirm the commission's order.
And that's because of your analysis of the ancillary generation cost as part of the distribution cost. Do I understand that correctly?
Really, based on my analysis of our provider of last resort obligation under 2814.
Yes.
Again,
yes.
I can stay away from the ancillary.
All right. Mr. Resnick, we all seem to be hung up on this, the characterization that the PUCO has made of the distribution ancillary service, the power plant, the new power plant being built. Can we look at the commission's order in the light that you have presented on 4928.14, or are you giving us a different basis on which the commission's rationale should rest?
No, I don't think it's a different analysis or a different basis. I think the commission may have used a broader term. I think ancillary service, which is very broad, includes provider of last resort obligation service. If you look at the definition of ancillary service, it gives examples. It says including but not limited to. And so they don't list under that definition provider of last resort, but interpreting 49, I don't think requires much interpretation. When you look at 4928.14, it's just clearly another service imposed on the distribution entity to provide a firm supply of generation service. Just one final point, that the question about the refund that the commission imposed was that if this plant did not go forward, that the company would be required to refund any costs that could be associated with some other plant that did go forward in some other jurisdiction. And so it's not that the commission made the whole $24 million refundable. It was just a portion, depending upon whether or not construction began on a continuous course 5 years from its entry on rehearing.
Thank you, Mr. Resnick.
Thank you for your indulgence.
Thank you. Mr. Randazzo, you may take 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. I want to address a couple of things. First of all, with regard to the labeling, the General Assembly has been very clear in the restructuring legislation. And if you turn to 492815, Section B, you will see that the General Assembly said that if it's a distribution function or if it's an ancillary service, then the Commission is obligated to set charges in accordance with Chapter 4905 and 4909, not 492814. 4905 and 4909 are chapters that deal with the Commission's traditional authority to establish rates based upon the cost of providing service when the plants are used and useful and providing service to customers. There is nothing historically in Ohio's traditional rate-making legislation that would have authorized the Commission to provide an increase for research and development costs, as Mr. Small has already expressed. With regard to the relief that's been requested, yes, we filed a writ of prohibition. We asked the court to find that the commission was behaving illegally because we were concerned about the confusing implications and because we thought that delay would only serve the purpose of delaying a resolution as it has. We suggested to the court that if you granted the writ, it would help the General Assembly rise to the occasion and do something that we have all been suggesting the General Assembly needs to do.
Is that our role?
I think that at times it is the role of the judicial branch.
But a writ of
suggest that the legislature is the place to take this.
Writ of prohibition challenges the jurisdiction of a public authority to do what it's doing. You can argue that they've exceeded their authority, but they certainly have the jurisdiction, don't they, to decide whether these costs or whether the issue here. This is not a question whether they're outside their jurisdiction.
Yeah, Mr. Chief Justice, had the commission, as we suggested the commission should have done initially when we intervened in the case, had the commission followed the appropriate statutory procedures for increasing rates, I believe they would have had the jurisdiction to proceed. They did not do that. They chose to invent authority. They chose to rewrite a law that gives customers the worst of both worlds. We get high market-based prices for old, less expensive generation, and AEP is threatening us with service unreliability unless we guarantee the cost for the expensive stuff. That's not a balance that the General Assembly tried to strike. That's not the job of the commission to respond to threats of unreliable service. And 49-2815B, if there's a threat of inadequate service, that statute specifically gives the commission the authority to direct the construction of facilities and equipment to address the problem and says that customers are going to pay for it. There ought not to be any question about the commission's authority to deal with a crisis or a threat. If the commission was interested in dealing with a crisis and a threat, it would have acted upon the provision that was in AEP's rate stabilization plan that we supported.
You need to sum up, Mr. Rendezzo.
We supported. And that provision said that the commission would conduct hearings and investigate how to deal with these kinds of issues and submit a report to the General Assembly. We have had not one step taken in that direction, despite all the problems that you have seen in the course of the issues that have been presented to you in the course of appeals in these cases. We asked the court to reverse the commission, to find that the commission was entirely without authority, and to direct that the monies that were illegally charged to customers be returned to customers. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Mr. Rendezzo. The case is submitted. You will be advised of our opinion.